Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined with Sim Longa. And Sim, last time we talked, we kind of were hinting about how this past week could be, kind of like a measuring stick for, kind of how this Big Ten season would start out for the Boilermakers, and boy, did they answer the call. Two really impressive victories, one on the road, their first Big Ten road win of the season. And let's start there last week, because that I know Minnesota is not the best team, but anytime you can go into the barn, one, and come away healthy. And two, come out with a victory, but not only with a victory, but just how they played. That was a really impressive win there, to beat Minnesota by 20.
Yeah, man, it was a little choppy there in the first half of that game. We're only up, I think we're only up one at half, and you know, weren't shooting it great. And like you said, like Minnesota, they're not a great team, but obviously playing at home, they're gonna play better than they probably usually do. But then boys got going in the second half, man. They especially got on from three. They got on early, stayed on for later. It was beautiful to see, man. Honestly, like the way that they were able to control that second half and just it was, I don't know about you, but like I felt like the lead went from like four or five, and then all of a sudden it was like damn near 20. And I was like, I think I looked at one point. And I was like, wait, like, how are we up this much? Like, I think I was just so tense off the way that the first half had gone. I was kind of feeling like, oh man, this is just going to be back and forth, back and forth. And even though Purdue was scoring, I guess I just wasn't really picking up that, like, oh shit, like the lead is ballooning here. Like, we're like, Minnesota is not answering, which like I'm fine with. But yeah, man,
And
it was really nice to see that.
we gotta talk about the game that Fletcher Lawyer had. We'll go into detail that Braden Smith had as well, because he he had a just a historic week. And we'll talk about that, but gotta give a shout out to Fletch as well. He had a season high 24 points. But the big thing, I mean, 8 of 10 shooting, 4 of 6 from deep, including just the ridiculous banked in three from the corner. That is just one of those shots that when you're going,
Sure
those
enough.
ones seem to fall.
Yeah.
But it was a game that was kind of highlighted by the big three. Fletch had 24, Braden had 20, Trey had 17. But then you found a fourth score, and it probably was one that we maybe didn't talk about enough as far as scoring. We had talked about how he had started to play well. And we'll talk about the lineup change next, but I did just want to touch on Caleb specifically. He got his first start since his sophomore year. And man, did he answer the call with 11 points and 6 rebounds. And one, Sim, it was really good just to see him play well, just for kind of what he means for the program. But two, it was also kind of what we've been talking about, is how you need that fourth score. It doesn't really matter who it is, but you need another guy to help the big three there. And in the game against Minnesota, it was Caleb's turn.
Yeah, man. I like you said, we haven't been picky about who that four scorer needs to be. We've just been very adamant about the fact you need somebody else along with the big three. And for Caleb to get the start and to play as well as he did. And obviously, like, Caleb's not a guy who you run plays for, but with his energy and just, obviously his attention to detail, obviously knowing on both sides of the ball, understanding the offense and understanding where to be defensively. He played so well, man. He played so well, and I love it for him. To have a stat line of 11 and 6, shot well from the line too. Was 5 of 6 from the line. I mean, he really. It was very refreshing to see. And like you said, it like obviously you love it for him. Like you said, it was his first start since his sophomore year, and I think there's a lot of us who were kind of unsure about like who you wanted more from Caleb. You felt like you would be able to get more from him, especially on this team. Like you knew there was an opportunity for him if he was up for it. And at least so far, it seemed as though like he's like you said he's answered the call, man. And it was really nice to see how he performed on that first game at Minnesota.
Yeah, and The other thing that really kind of sticks out about that game is the switch in the lineup that Coach Paint had made. And so starting with this game against Minnesota last week, he took out Miles and Cam from the lineup and inserted Caleb and CJ Cox into the starting lineup, which if anybody is a numbers nerd like me, I thought it was kind of cool that it was 1, 2, 3, 4 that were the starters. But I think it was kind of a message that Paint was sending to the team. After the Minnesota and Northwestern game, based off how kind of everybody played, I would say message received. And the one thing too, they talked about it on the broadcast against Northwestern that I thought was interesting when I can't remember if it was Bardo or the play-by-play guy, but they said they talked to Painter about the lineup change. And Paint kind of made an emphasis to say like it's not a knock like on anybody, but kind of highlight how like CJ and Caleb have played well enough to earn the starting nod, and how he feels like Miles and Cam kind of can play better and be that spark off the bench. And to kind of highlight that like it's not like any kind of knock, it's just kind of maybe this is the way that he can get the most out of everybody, specifically those four guys.
Right. No, I agree. And I mean, shout out to Payne because clearly he listens to the pod. You know what I'm saying? Because we was out here saying all those type of suggestions. And yeah, man, I just like, when we were talking about it, about like how, you kind of needed to play CJ because you needed someone else to have to, you needed another ball handler on the floor. And then with Caleb, you wanted like, he just in terms of his size, and you're talking about rebounding because we were highlighting how the rebounding numbers were slacking. And I feel like with Paint, more times than not, when he makes these coaching changes, I've seen when he makes these lineup changes, they're more so rooted for like he said, like more of what guys have been doing to earn it, as opposed to like, hey, well, these two guys, like they haven't been playing well. And I think he's right too. Like Miles and Cam could come off the bench and they can still be effective. I think like I think back to when Vince Edwards, when he got benched, and I remember how like what that did for him, because I remember him saying actually like that starting off, like when he came off the bench, he was able to kind of already understand like, okay, what do I need to give the team when I come on the floor? Because he was able to, you're seeing what's going on and you're understanding, okay, like if I'm coming in for so and so, I need to do this. And I feel like Miles and Cam are capable of doing that. I mean, we haven't gotten to it yet, but it was nice to see them knock down some shots in the Northwestern game. I think they needed that for their own confidence. But yeah, man, I'm a fan of the obviously I'm a fan of the of the lineup change, but it definitely seems as though guys have responded to that the way on both sides. They've responded to it the way that you hope they would, which is, hey man, like it's still about the team. It's still about trying to win, and you still need to be accountable even if your role has changed. You still need to be good at your role. So yeah, man, it was just nice. It was really, really nice, man.
So they won by 20 on the road against Minnesota, and then came back home to Mackey on Sunday and really handled business again. Kind of it was a pretty dominating game against Northwestern from start to finish. The final score 79-61. I think it was probably one of the best defensive games that we have played. But the thing that really kind of stood out to me was just the balance in the scoring. Like, Sim, if I would have told you that Trey and Fletch would have combined to score 21 points against Northwestern, I bet you probably don't think that Purdue wins by 18.
No.
But it was just a really good balanced team win, and really just kind of, again, a game where they just handled their business.
Yeah, I think like you said, defensively, I think that's probably, especially the first half, that's probably the best we've seen. I don't want to say necessarily all year, but it definitely is up there as one of the better performances there. For Northwestern, only shoot 25% from the field in the first half. I think it was 14% from three. And yeah, we just, like you said, it was kind of like it was a balanced blitz. Like it was just kind of, everyone was kind of getting involved. Like it was like, oh, I want mine. I want my time. I want my shine. I want to get in on this as well. And you know, but I again, that was another thing. There's another game where obviously in the first half, but like where I'm watching the score and it's just like Purdue keeps scoring, and Northwestern just like wasn't. They were missing, they were turning the ball over. I mean, it was just it was incredible. I mean, it was fun to watch. And it was just nice to see us take advantage too of the fact that they were shooting so poorly. And it also, I think it's good from a, I think from a coaching point of like, guys, like when we're engaged and we're really on our shit defensively, like we can cut people's water off and we can make it like this, like it can get bad for them real quick. Because obviously and defensively, that's something that's the type of attention to detail and intensity that you want to be, an effort that you want to be playing with, whether you're at home or if you're on the road. So yeah, I just like that was a really, really impressive performance because I mean, yeah, I know Northwestern doesn't have Boo Booey anymore, which like thank God, but like I still figured that
Nine
it was
years
gonna
later.
be, bro. I still figured it was gonna be a closer game. And just like you said, man, like if you told, like you said, like you know, Trey and Fletch combining for 21 points, and then if you had added in that Fletch didn't hit a three, I'm very worried. Like, and then you tell me that they win, I'm like, oh man, it must have been like a must have squeaked it out somehow, or someone else like went nuclear off the bench. But it was a pretty balanced attack, like we said, and yeah, man, just nice to get both wins. And kind of like we were talking about, you know, the last episode, like if you think you're the team that you are in terms of like being on the upper that upper tier of the Big Ten, like these were two games you had to win. I didn't necessarily think they were going to be in this type of this fashion where essentially from the second half of the Minnesota game, they just kind of like stayed on fire for, you know, basically like the, like three straight quarters, I mean, three straight halves. But these performances on top of the fact that you like the way that they won, on top of the fact that they won, it definitely kind of gave you, at least gave me a good feeling of like, all right, yeah, like this team does have, they really do still have like some bullets in the chamber in terms of really being able to have a say on how this conference season plays out in the Big Ten.
And I did want to highlight too the game Sunday from CJ Cox, because he, he really kind of played his best overall game. Obviously, he had that span in the Alabama game where he just went off. But as far as overall game, I mean, 4 of 6, for 12 points, 2 of 4 from three, but also he was your leading rebounder with 8 rebounds. And a few of those were like offensive ones too, where he just like came out of nowhere. And like just kind of the effort plays that he made, and him knocking down some shots as well was really nice to see kind of how he responded, as well to getting those starts
Yeah,
last week.
man. Yeah, no, I mean like CJ, especially now that he's back in the starting lineup, you know, his progression, his him coming along can just do so much good for this team. And like you said, not just the 12 points, but I think we all know he can score, like you said, based on that Alabama game, you know. But the fact that he had those 8 rebounds, and it wasn't that they were all 8 defensive rebounds, which still would have been fine. But you know, is a pretty good balance. Three offensive, and 5 defensive. Like you said, that means that on both sides of the floor, you know, he's out there seeking the ball. And that's what you need, man. You like, you know, we've talked about how rebounding is going to be a major point of emphasis for this team, and how like in the games that we have struggled, you haven't seen that the rebounding performance that you want. But you know, to get 8 from him, on top of the 6 you got from Braden, I mean, you had 16 rebounds between all three of your starting guards. And I feel like if you're doing that night in and night out, like that could bode pretty well for you.
And now, I mean, let's talk about the man of the week. Not many players across the country had a better week last week than Braden Smith. I mean, his stat line on the road against Minnesota was just like incredible. 20 points, 10 assists, 6 rebounds, no turnovers. Like to do that on the road, in an environment like the barn, like What a performance. And with that game, he passed the 1,000 point mark for his career. So shout out to him on that. Also with that, he became the first player in Big Ten history to have 1,000 points, 500 assists, and 400 rebounds in their first 3 seasons. And do just want to highlight that it's January, the start of January, so it's really like 2.5. So just some incredible numbers there. And then he answers it with just another overall good performance against Northwestern. He was the leading scorer with 22 points. And another good overall game, 22 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. Was flirting with that almost triple double. He did pass Brian Walker to become second on the school's career assist chart. So, I mean, just what a week, man.
Yeah, man. It's crazy because, like the expectations for Braden were high this year, like knowing that the burden, the onus was going to be more on him. And obviously he's had a few bad games this year, but you can say that about the obviously about the entire team. But man, as he's especially after these last two losses, he's definitely responded in the manner that you want him to see. And just like you said, the way that he's playing these like complete games in terms of having 20 and then upwards of 10 assists and then having 5, 6 rebounds, that's what you need from him. That's just flat out what you need from him. I mean, the only knock I have on him from the Northwestern game is he had 5 turnovers, but like you said, in the Minnesota game he has 20, 10, and no turnovers. So you're gonna have a game or so where yeah, maybe he gets a little loose with the ball, but the overall the overall is that Braden usually obviously is taking care of the ball and just doing a great job in terms of running running the offense, getting us into what we need to, getting us into our sets, and then also too making sure that he himself is being aggressive, because that's something we have to have. In previous years it was okay if he was more deferring, but like we can't have that now. There's more shots to be had with the departure of Big Zach, but he's very like I'm fine with, like he had 22 on 16 shots against Northwestern, and then yeah 20 on 17 against Minnesota, but he was 5 of 11 from three. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that Minnesota game he started like he didn't score like right away, like it took a few minutes, and then like I want to say it might have been like the under 12 before he got like his first basket, because his first basket I believe was a three, and that's the one that got him to 1,000. It took a bit before he got that, so it wasn't like he just like came out the gates and was like getting busy. It was like no, like it took a little bit, and then he started scoring. And yeah, God, granted he was over. I mean, it was a bit overshadowed by Fletch, but yeah, man, just great week for Braden. I'm sorry I'm gonna take this from you, but like the fact that this is his first Big Ten player of the week was crazy to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think he's very firmly put himself back in the player of the year conversation. I wouldn't say he's at the top right now, but he had kind of fallen off a little bit. But he's very much right back in that conversation. And I did just want to highlight this one stat because I keep like rereading this, and this is just an insane stat. Just to kind of highlight like that the heater Braden has been on. So prior to this season, Purdue in school history has had two games where someone had 20 points and 10 assists. Two games in school history. Braden has reached those marks 3 times in the last 6 games and has 14 career point assists, double doubles, all of which have come the last 53 games that he's played in. So, I mean, like, just that's just insane what he's doing right now. And, it seems weird because, I think what's gonna hurt him, and it sucks, is that Edie has been so dominant the past 2 years that everybody's kind of tired about talking about Purdue and like player of the year conversations. But man, what Braden is doing, like he is literally rewriting the history books for Purdue basketball right now. It's just pretty impressive and fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think everyone was probably coming in this year being like, oh, the God Edie's gone. So, like, we don't have to talk about Purdue like that. But obviously, with what Braden is doing, we might be right back here. And I think, like you said, like, I think he's definitely got himself back probably on that lower part of the player of the year conversation. But there's an opportunity here in terms of, like, you know, we were talking about this offline a bit, but like in terms of how that schedule is lining up to where, you know, he string along a few more of these performances, and you know, they're accompanied with wins, of course, and there won't be a choice. Like you're gonna have to talk about him a certain kind of way. You know, if we're sitting here in you know, late January, and you know, Purdue's in what, the 1, 2, or the 3 slot in the conference. Yeah, you're gonna have to be like, wait, how, like, why are they here? And then you know, I think that's when you're gonna, oh, well, look what Braden's been doing and pulling up stats like you just pulled up.
Yeah, and they kind of hinted it on the broadcast over the weekend too, but I think it's fair, like, and it's, you know, time to start at least planting the seed for conversations about not only Braden being the best point guard to ever play at Purdue, but you can start to make the argument the best point guard to play in the Big Ten, with just the record-setting numbers. He's doing things that nobody else has done, and he's doing it, you know, like multiple times, which is pretty wild.
He's undersized.
So you said what?
So he's undersized too. Like, he's undersized, and so, like, of course, going the complete opposite of what it's been, where it was all hashtag just tall. Like, Braden's doing all this stuff, and more times than not, it's not like he's the guy guarding him is probably bigger than he is. So.
So it'll be, hopefully he can keep that up. But as we kind of get ready to look forward to this week, I did just want to kind of put a bow on the games last week, and I would be remiss if I didn't highlight about Purdue's dominance in Big Ten play. So Matt Painter, with the win against Northwestern, it was his 229th Big Ten Conference victory. Which passed him, which moved him past Ward Peggy Lambert for fourth on the career wins list in conference history. So it's Bob Knight at the top, and then Tom Izzo, and then you got Gene at 265, Matt at 229, and then obviously Ward at 228. Shout out to Paint on that. But like the big thing that jumps out to me about that is, three of the top five coaches, as far as Big Ten conference wins, all did it at Purdue. So, you know, I think one, it just speaks to like the longevity of the different coaches that Purdue has been lucky enough to have, which you don't see a lot anymore. But two, it just also kind of speaks to just like the run that Purdue has been on.
Yeah, I mean, it to me, it further validates why Purdue has the most Big Ten regular season conference championships. I mean, like you said, like the 3, 4, and 5 spot in terms of for wins and coaching in the Big Ten are all occupied by Purdue coaches. So yeah, that was a wild stat when they mentioned it during the game, and it made me kind of feel the same way of like, man, like we've been fortunate to have some good coaches who've been here for a while and been able to obviously rack up a fair amount of wins. So yeah, man, just love that for us.
So, Sim, let's kind of look ahead now to this week. So another week where it's split, one game on the road, one game back at home. And just like last week, you have a game Thursday on the road. The Boilermakers will travel to take on Rutgers, and then they'll return back to Mackey on Sunday to take on Nebraska. And so with this Rutgers game specifically, we were kind of talking about it offline. But all of a sudden, like after the two wins last week, this kind of turns into like a pretty big swing game. One, like you just kind of want to exercise some demons, going to Rutgers. Just always, you know, we don't have to tell anybody listening this kind of how hard it's been for Purdue to play Rutgers, especially in New Jersey there. But if you can get this win, and then if you can win this weekend against Nebraska, all of a sudden you're on a 5-game winning streak with four game and a 4-game Big Ten conference winning streak. And kind of the narrative switches a little bit. So this is, for it being very early January 9 game, this kind of all of a sudden seems like a pretty big game, as far as kind of how the rest of the season will play out.
Yeah, no, it definitely is a game, like you said, where you win this one and you can really start like kind of like a snowball effect within the Big Ten, because that would be it'd be three straight in the Big Ten, and now you're sitting there and you're like, okay, well look, if we can parlay this with Nebraska, now that's four straight before you head out west, and you have an opportunity, and like you said, it starts really with this Rutgers game where you can exercise some demons, and I think it would be an impressive win given like the team that Rutgers has. But if you're able to win this game and then be able to string on maybe a couple others after that, you really have put yourself in a good position, come mid-January in terms of where you're sitting at in the conference. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm not getting my hopes up about this Rutgers game just because I like that it's just a tough venue to play at. And obviously, like you mentioned, like there's We don't have the greatest history there. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call Rutgers Purdue East anymore in terms of the way that they play, but I just, like you said, if this is one where, because of who that Rutgers team is and kind of how they're viewed at, I think arguably within like the country, within the conference and then within the country, you're able to go in there and get that win. I think that'll turn some heads, and then you can come back home and you can hopefully defend home court against Nebraska. I mean, it's early as tip too. Yeah, you can really set yourself up well for like this, like a nice run in the Big Ten, and put yourself in a position to where you have a possibility of three-peating.
Yeah, and looking at Rutgers, like if you were just to look at their record, like they're 8-7, 1-3 in conference play, it looks like just a game on paper that Purdue should, kind of go there and take care of business. But they're a good team. They got two probably lottery picks, and one guy. Harper, could probably be in the number two pick, but he's definitely going to be up there. And also the fact that they've kind of lost two in a row, definitely worries me now. And then while they're 8-7 overall, at home they're 7-1. So that kind of speaks to how hard it is to play at Jersey Mike's Arena. It looks like if you're looking at it on paper that it should be an easy win, but man, they've struggled the past two games. They've really have not shot the ball well, which just means that some random guy for Rutgers is just gonna go off and have a career night.
I mean, honestly, if you are the type who gambles and you can find some individual player stats, I mean, take all their overs. That's kind of why this kind of feels like it's starting to trend too. But like you said, like the fact that they're seven, what she said, they're 7-1 at home. Yeah, like that's really the number I'm concerned with. And I'm sure that obviously have like the fact that they've lost two straight, as you pointed out, the fact that they've lost two straight, now they're gonna be, hungry as hell to try to turn this thing around, because we're still early enough into the year to where you can, like, even if you've lost a couple. I think we just saw it with Purdue, where you lose a couple straight, but you're still at the point of the year where you can turn it around, and you just need to have that one good performance, and hopefully that becomes the start of the turn. And I know Rutgers is probably looking at, yeah, they're probably looking at this game on Thursday as that opportunity of like, guys, look, we're gonna have a good team coming in. We have an opportunity to really kind of turn our season around right now, because the last two teams they lost to, IU and Wisconsin, they're not ranked. Purdue is ranked. So, they're naturally going to be up for that. I'm sure the fans are going to show up because, yeah, they're going to be like, oh yeah, every time Purdue comes in, they're ranked, the vibes. So, I'm definitely I'm definitely gonna be a nervous. I'm gonna be a nervous Nelly watching this one. 'Cause yeah, man, that's
Yeah, and I think the big like things to watch in this game is can Purdue continue forward the defensive effort that they had against Northwestern, specifically, obviously, against Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper. Ace is really the guy that kind of worries me, because Purdue has had trouble containing the dribble. And he's a guy that can get to the line. He can break you down, and get in the paint, which has kind of been Purdue's biggest weakness, defensively. And then just kind of looking at it, like Dylan Harper, obviously he's a really tough matchup for anybody. The dude is going to be a lottery pick, and is a stud. But like, it worries me with if you're going with the same lineup that Purdue went with last week, who you put on Dylan Harper, because this seems like a game where you're really going to need Miles and Cam on the defensive end to try to contain him.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if on Thursday, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if there was a lineup shift. I wouldn't say necessarily putting both Cam and Miles back in, but it wouldn't surprise me if one of those two started. I would think it would probably be Miles just from a defensive standpoint. But I think too that you're probably going to see Miles or Cam on the floor after that first. I'd rather say after that first round of substitutions. I would imagine at the latest, you're probably going to see either at least Miles or Cam on the floor at all times, because if they're going to have either Dylan Harper out there, then obviously you want to have someone out there for him. If they have Ace Bailey out there, you want to have someone out there for him. And obviously if they have both, you want to try, obviously if Miles and Cam are giving you good minutes, and it's for sure if they're hitting shots, then like, yeah, you're going to play them both together. Just kind of match those two, because those two guys are, to me, are the ones who stick out as having the physical skill set that at least to try to slow down. I'm not going to say stop either of those two, because like you said, they're lottery pick talents. But those two guys seem to possess the skill set to at least try to slow those guys down. And if you can slow those guys down and make them inefficient, then like, yeah, you like how that bodes for Purdue. But I also think from an overall standpoint for us, rebounding and taking care of the basketball are going to be really big talking points, I think, for this game. I think if we're able to rebound and defend well and take care of the basketball, I like our chances better for sure. But I can also see that this being a game where just kind of that environment, you get a little loose with the foot with the basketball, and it can kind of turn into an avalanche effect, which can then jump start them getting into rhythm if they are missing shots.
Yeah, it'll be a really interesting game to kind of see, how Purdue can respond. And a team that, Purdue doesn't probably match up with very well. But on the flip side, then Rutgers probably doesn't match up very well with Purdue. It could be a game where it feels like a game where you're gonna need TKR to really kind of try to dominate the paint, because it feels like they'll have, and when I say they, Rutgers will have a bit of a size advantage on the guards of Purdue. So you're really going to need the bigs, especially Trey, like you said, to not only rebound but to kind of assert themselves down on the block as well.
You're definitely gonna need your bigs to step up. This I could see this being a big game for TKR. And even obviously Caleb, you're hoping he's continuing what his trajectory has been in terms of his contributions. Again, he's a guy you don't have to run plays for, so just his energy, and if he's out here grabbing rebounds and just kind of, I don't know, like if there's if the awareness is up, man, I think that this is another opportunity for him to have a game similar to what he had in against Minnesota. Or what was it, 11-6? I can see him having that type of game, provided his energy and his play is continues on what it's been these last few.
Yeah, we could definitely need it. Hopefully Rutgers will continue to struggle scoring the basketball. But as we all know, as Purdue fans, that's probably not going to happen. But we will see. Like you said, A couple early tips this week. So on Thursday the 9th, it is a 6 p.m. Eastern tip off. That game is on FS1. And then we didn't talk about it too much, but the Boilermakers then will return to Mackey on the 12th for a 12 o'clock noon Eastern tip off on BTN. And that one, Sim, just kind of the Nebraska game specifically, just feels like one where you just got to protect home court. Like, no matter what happens against Rutgers, it's one where you're like, I don't care how it happens, but just get a win.
Like I mean, I would say it for both of them, but it's like you said, like just looking at that Nebraska game, that's one where it don't really matter. Like style points, I don't give a shit about them. Like just you just have more points at the end, and we will like you know you and I will get on here, and we'll break that down a certain kind of way. But just like just style points don't matter. Just you got to win that game. I think when like win or lose, how that Rutgers game goes, you have to come back and you have to win that Nebraska game. You just have to.
Yep, I totally agree. So those will be two very interesting games. Hopefully we'll have nothing but good things to talk about come next week. Did want to just switch gears just a little bit and talk about the Purdue football program and kind of what Coach Odom and his staff have been doing. They've been out on the recruiting trail and really been hitting the portal. It's we've kind of hinted at it, like it's gonna be a totally brand new team next year. I don't know if we're really gonna know, outside of maybe like Maccabee and a couple other dudes, like there's not gonna be a lot of familiar names. I think at last count I had looked on Twitter earlier today and I think we're up to like 27 dudes that we've gotten in the portal. Obviously, kind of part of that is just because we had to, because so many, there's just so much turnover from when Walters left. I'm not going to go down the list and talk about all the guys, but a couple of things that kind of really stood out to me was it really seemed like obviously Odom got a lot of guys that he was familiar with at UNLV. A lot of the staff has familiarity with Arkansas as well, so there's been a handful of guys from there. But out, kind of outside of those Arkansas guys, they got a wide receiver from Tennessee. But outside of that, like it's been getting a lot of solid guys from smaller like MAC type schools who were all conference type players, which to me, and I know kind of you talk about it like. You want to wait to see, obviously, kind of what happens on the field. But to me, I think you're setting yourself up for more success by getting guys like that versus kind of what it felt like Walters did and kind of hurt himself a little bit was he took on more guys from SEC schools who weren't getting playing time, may have had, off the field issues, may have had motor issues for whatever reason they weren't playing at SEC schools. And so Walters kind of put all of his eggs in that basket. And it seems like Coach Odom is getting more guys who, while it might be like at smaller type conferences, he's getting like all conference guys and guys who, played the entire year and, had 50 tackles or, had contributions on their team. They weren't just guys who either redshirted or didn't play at all at a SEC school.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's kind of something that gives you it gives you a good feeling just in terms of and the guys who you're bringing in, because it's important too to bring in guys who you know are going to put in the hard work, because above like what this team will be this year, I'm Coach Odom and his staff, I'm sure are trying to they're probably very very concerned with like not like in a bad way, but like just very very focused on the culture that they build. So as you start bringing in recruits, or you're starting to bring in even guys who might have less experience playing, and when you bring them into our into the Purdue program, that like you already have some some pillars in terms of like, hey, look, this is the way that we go to work out here, and this is the way that we kind of like lock in and, you know, and perfect the craft per se. Like you said, like, and I like you know, you're getting guys from, they've been getting some guys from smaller conferences, but they're clearly guys who've been able to perform at those at those smaller conferences at an elite level. And I think we're, you know, over the last, you know, probably 10 years, we've heard a lot more instances of guys from smaller conferences, you know, transferring and going to a bigger school and then still being able to find success there. So yeah, like again, like you said, I'm trying to I've been trying this whole time, whether it's been people who are leaving or people who are coming coming to Purdue. I'm trying to not get like too one way or the other. I'm trying to like try to stay as even keel as possible, because I know that like, hey, this all sounds good now, but like you don't win anything, you know, necessarily in the off season. You know, we got to see what the product looks like, but it is kind of refreshing to see just the mix of people that he's getting. Like you said, the similarity that seems to be with all of them, of like, rather with a lot of them, where it's like of having significant playing time and being able and having like kind of proven themselves, even if it has been in a smaller conference.
I will say too, just to kind of hop on that as well, it does seem kind of interesting. They've now gotten three quarterbacks from the portal. They just picked up another Evan Chubb, I think. He's Canadian. I can't remember where he came from off the top of my head. Just saw the tweet that he was from Canada. But three new quarterbacks in the room. And just kind of interesting. Obviously, we don't know too much about any of them, but definitely going to be a new face there. And I would just kind of be curious to know like what was told to these three guys to get them all to come to Purdue, because in this day and age, with the portal and everything, if guys aren't it's almost like if guys aren't guaranteed starting jobs, they're either going to dip or they're not going to come to your school. And so to get three quarterbacks specifically when you can obviously only play one, I thought was kind of interesting, and just kind of would have liked to have been like a fly on the wall, kind of hear those discussions there.
Right. No, that's a good point. And obviously, I mean, my assumption would be that those guys probably all know that you know, that they're gonna have to compete to some extent. Whether that's say like this person's probably gonna be the starter, but like obviously there's an opportunity for you to compete for the backup role, blah, 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 which I don't kind of sounds weird to say. But so I mean, but I imagine that these guys are aware of the fact that, hey, look, I'm gonna have some competition. And personally myself, I like the fact that, like, I mean, I that makes me feel good, because I feel like we've seen a lot in college where people, like, where you're seeing kids nowadays who are trying to run from competition, run from that potential adversity. You know, like you said, in those conversations, like you're having a lot of people who want to be promised certain things in terms of playing time or obviously NIL, that type of stuff. And seemed like, obviously, I think both Odom's kind of like, hey, look, nope, like we're gonna what everyone's gonna work for everyone's gonna work for it, you know, everyone's gonna work for it the same way. And so I'm eager to see how that plays out as well, the quarterback position, like you said.
Yeah, so lots of exciting stuff there. We'll continue to kind of monitor, everything that happens as far as guys c coming in, or if any other guys leave. And then probably once it gets closer to actual football season, we may do kind of a more detailed breakdown and highlight some of the specific newcomers. But as of right now, the focus is primarily on the hardwood. Like we talked about, a big week for the Boilermakers, kind of a big swing game. Hopefully on Thursday that'll swing the Boilermakers and let them, kind of continue their winning ways. That'll be again Thursday, 6 p.m. tip on FS1, and then return back to Mackey on Sunday, January 12th. Noon tip off Eastern time on BTN. So regardless of what happens, Sim and I will be there to break it all down. But hopefully we are discussing two more victories there, and a little pretty impressive winning streak, hopefully. But we will break it all down like we always do. Want to thank everybody for listening, for their support of the podcast. Please continue to keep sharing, liking everything, interact with us on Twitter there. We like all of that. So thank everybody for that. And most importantly, boiler up.
Yes, sir.